then has to be learned in order for the human life to be productive. Because according to the Vedas, human life has one purpose, and that is self-realization. Atato brahma jignasa. The human form is especially designed to inquire, to ask questions. And the ultimate question is, what is Brahman? What is the greatest? What is the greatest thing? All other questions are not important for a human being. They come within the realm of the bodily existence, how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. But the Vedas point out that the animals naturally know how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. A wildebeest knows how to do these things soon after it's born. It can stand on its own four legs, and it can run around and eat and do all kinds of things. So it's not extraordinary to have a life of opulent eating, or opulent sleeping, opulent mating, opulent defending. But the Bhagavatam says, for a self-realized person, you may not care for such things, you may minimize such things. In fact, it asks the question, when there are ample flats of land, what is the importance of sleep world? And what is that other place? Mattress heaven? There's all these shops that sell mattresses all over the world. You know, everyone has to have a soft place to lie down. But in the Bhagavatam, it says, well, if there's a comfortable place to lie on the ground, what is the point of getting all these extra things just so one can lie down comfortably? And then it says, do the trees no longer give in charity? Do the rivers no longer provide fresh water? All these things are provided by nature, actually, for one's sustenance. It's not that hard to maintain oneself and to have a standard where we develop our eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in an elaborate way is not helpful for the human being. Actually, to simplify those things and concentrate the mind on the self and our relationship with Krishna, according to the Bhagavad Gita, actually brings real happiness. Bhaya sparshe swasakta ma vindat yatmaniyat sukham. One actually feels happiness when one no longer concentrates on trying to find outer happiness, but looks for inner happiness. So, Bhagavad Gita has the essential instructions for perfecting the human life. And Krishna gives some very encouraging instructions. As in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Tesham satati yuktanam pajatam priti purvakam dadami bhuti yogam tam yenamam upayantite. Says, if you are interested in spiritual life and you try for it, he said, then I'll help you. I'll be your ally. I'm there within your heart, he says. Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami bhuti yogam tam yenamam upayantite. If you endeavor and if you fix your mind on Krishna, even though it's impossible. Arjuna said it was impossible because Krishna told him, he says in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he says, you should steady the mind and you should learn to control it. And Arjuna said, control the mind, that's impossible. He said, it's about as easy as controlling the wind. And chanchalam hi mana Krishna, he says that the mind is chanchala. Chanchala means flickering. So once we can see what chanchala means, when none of the kids are restless today, everyone's peaceful, so we can't see what chanchala means. Puja's always peaceful, and Advaita's peaceful. And but chanchala means you move from one place to the next all the time. Like you get up, move here, move there, always moving everywhere. Notice the mind, it's always moving. If you try to steady the mind and you think about it, where's my mind now? You try to put the mind in one place, then it'll go somewhere else. It's always going, 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 going. So Krishna says that chanchalam hi mana Krishna, Arjuna says, it's flickering. And that it's balavad, it's very strong, dridham, it's determined, and it's also pramati, which means mad. So if someone comes in the door now who's chanchala, going all over the room, and he's mad, and he's also very strong, and he's also very determined, our whole class will be disturbed. Absolutely. And so with an uncontrolled mind that's mad, that's moving here and there, that's very determined, very strong, your whole life is ruined. You have no peace. You can't have any peace without a controlled mind. So Krishna recommends that although it's very difficult to control the mind, you should practice. He said by proper practice and by detachment, one can come to steady the mind. And he gives other advice that gradually, step by step, you can do this. Over time, you can learn to control the mind and to think of Krishna and to concentrate on your spiritual duty in life. Then actually you can have some real happiness and experience peace. So Krishna then says in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that Tesham Ivanukam Partam Aham Jnana Jamdamaha Nashayam Yatma Bhavasto Jnana Deepena Bhashvata. That if you take this path and you try for it, he said, all light up your heart, your consciousness. Your path will be lit by me. Just the way a lamp will light up a dark place. You'll be able to see. So Bhagavad Gita is a not just theory. It's a very practical instruction that Krishna gives. And it's ever fresh. People anywhere, everywhere who hear the Bhagavad Gita find solace and they find direction because it's so clear and universal. Beginning with the first instruction, Dehi no smin yata dehe komaran yovadanjara. Just hearing that the body's changing from boyhood to youth to old age and going into another body at death is the most valuable information, because if I understand that my goal of life is not just to fix up this body and by some way or another try to stay in this world, if I change my priorities and understand that I can't keep it and that the things I think are mine are not mine, I relieve a great burden. It's actually some kind of madness to try to stay here and try to fix things up and make it nice. Just like if you are living in an apartment and you get an eviction notice, God forbid, and it says 30 days, and then you start fixing up the house, you call over your friends and ask them to go with you to pick up all kinds of new material, tear out the carpeting, put in new curtains, paint the place. It's not yours. You can't stay. That's a kind of madness. So immediately, Bhagavad Gita gives us our priority. Dehi no smin yata dehe komaran yobaran jara tata dehantara praptir. Just as you came into this life and you're changing from boyhood to youth to old age, you're going to have to give it up also and change into another body at death. Why would I become so attached? Therefore, Krishna recommends detachment. Detachment from the idea that this body is the all in all, that this life is the all in all. By that kind of detachment, Krishna says, you have a tool to get out of the material world. He says in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that the material world is like a gigantic tree, like a banyan tree. A banyan tree is hard when it's very large to tell where it begins and where it ends, because its branches and roots go every direction. like the roots come down from the branches into the ground. There's a huge banyan tree. I think it's the largest one on Oahu in Hawaii, behind the temple. And it's so large that there are two apartments inside the tree, actually. There's two separate apartments inside the tree. It's so huge. And if you see that tree, you can't tell where the roots are, where the branches are. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that this material world is like that. It's very complicated. It's a huge, gigantic tree with its roots are upward, its branches are down, and it has leaves, which are the Vedic hymns. Its twigs are the senses. And we become lost in that tree. And we can't tell how to get out of it. So he recommends that with the strong weapon of detachment, you can get free from that tree. So we have to have some kind of detachment that comes from knowledge. If we have some knowledge, some gyan, we actually understand I'm not my body, and that's my perspective, I'll be detached. Because why would I work so hard for something that's I don't get to keep? It's actually crazy. So Bhagavad Gita gives us that advantage. And if we don't have that advantage, then we remain in a crazy state. Please, everyone, move up one space, one full space. And you can pass go and collect $200. Now, Pooja, are you going to be able to stay till the end? Or do you have to go at a certain time? Are you on a schedule of any kind? You're okay. Are some of the other kids coming? We're going to chant also the ninth chapter. I heard they are. They're coming. Okay, so we'll wait till they come to chant the ninth chapter. Okay? You ready? She's ready. Bhagavad Gita is like a cow. Sarva Panishado Gavo Dukta Gopalanandana. Parto Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugda Gita Mritam Mahat. Shankaracharya says that the Bhagavad Gita is just like a cow. And Arjuna is like a calf. And Krishna is a cowherd boy. He takes care of cows. And he's milking the cow of Bhagavad Gita. And he's giving that milk to Arjuna and to anyone else who wants it. In fact, he set up the whole scene in Kurukshetra just for us, actually, so that he could speak the Bhagavad Gita again. He says that the science had been lost, even though the Vedic culture was still there, the science of Bhagavad Gita had been lost, because over time in the material world, things get passed on and they get obscured. And people forget things, and then they change the message, and then it loses its potency. So Krishna comes to revive it from time to time. And he came and spoke the Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And what a situation to speak such a dialogue, to engage in such a dialogue. Because there's a war about to start. Krishna knows, he's an expert judge of time and circumstance. I'm not making that up. That's one of the 64 qualities of Sri Krishna. He's an expert judge of time and circumstance. So he perfectly timed the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita so everyone would have full attention. Because if you read the Mahabharata, you know that when it comes to the war, and the war is about to start between the Kurus and the Pandavas, that you're not going to put the book down now. You want to see what's going to happen. The Pandavas have been cheated so many times. They were pushed out of their kingdom. They were just kids, and they had to go live in the forest for so long. They're such great heroes, and they're being protected by Krishna, but, you know, why are all these things happening? And then the war is coming, and you want to see what's going to happen now. They're going into the war. Are they going to get their kingdom back? And then Krishna sets the whole scene. The two armies are drawn, one on one side, one on the other, facing each other. Elephants. There's men that are so strong and trained in martial arts that they can, you know, take on. Some of them could take on one person. Some could take on 10 at a time. Some could take on 100 at a time. Some 1,000 at a time. Some 10,000 at a time. So skilled in martial arts. And some were said to be as strong as elephants. Had all kinds of weapons. The weaponry was through mantra. They learned all these subtle mantras that they could conjure weapons that would bewilder people's minds. And the military science was so sophisticated that they had formations for the armies. They would form into vyuhas, or different configurations, so that they could block out the other army and have strategic advantages and so on. And you can imagine what that, just the sounds of the battlefield, what it must have sounded like. Such huge, strong men on the field, and the chariots. I mean, just one chariot going down the street, you can imagine what a sound that would make. But, you know, thousands of them, and elephants with all kinds of ornaments, and these huge, strong warriors with weapons. I mean, your knees would become weak just hearing the sound going into there. So Arjuna's a great hero. He asks Krishna, who's driving his chariot, to take him in between the two armies so he could look at and see who's come there to fight. And Krishna arranged it so that he would come just before Bhishma, who was the grandfather of Arjuna and his dearly beloved. He raised him practically, because his father had died when he was young. And also Drona, who is his guru, military teacher, he was there too. So all his relatives were on the other side. And then Arjuna became bewildered. He's this great warrior, the greatest of all warriors, passed so many tests. He even fought with Lord Shiva and defeated him. He was so strong by Krishna's mercy, because Krishna empowered him. And now he comes to the battlefield, and he loses his composure right before the big battle. And Krishna set the whole thing up just so he could speak Bhagavad Gita again. And so now they're there, and Arjuna starts coming up with all kinds of excuses of why we shouldn't fight this battle. It's going to, you know, it's going to leave the women without any husbands. They're going to be helpless. There's going to be all kinds of problems in society. Who's going to offer pinda to the relatives? And all these good reasons he comes up with for not fighting. And then he becomes bewildered and overcome, really. So much so that he drops his bow, he begins to, tears come to his eyes, and he says, I'm not going to fight. I'd rather live by begging. Give up my position as a great warrior, and I'll go beg. And I'll just, you know, I'll live like a yati, some kind of sannyasi out in the woods. And then, in that state of bewilderment, he asks Krishna, what should I do? I don't know what to do. I don't know what my duty is. Please, instruct me. And in that state of utter humility and surrender to Krishna, asking, what is my duty? Accepting Krishna as his guru. Then Krishna begins to speak. Asochanam asochastvam prajnavaram chabhasase gatasunda gatasumscha nanu sochandi pandita. He says, all these things you're saying, you think you're a great pundit, a learned man. But actually, these types of things are not spoken by a learned person. You're actually a fool. That's the first thing Krishna says. He chastises Arjuna and said, you're speaking like a fool. Why? Because everything you're saying is in relationship to the material body. You're bewildered. You think you're the material body. Matra sparsha stukunteya shitoshna sukadukada agama paino nityas tamstiksha shribharta. And he tells him, you have to, these changes of material life, these difficulties, these situations are going to come and go. You have to learn to tolerate them and to do your duty, to continue on with your proper duty. And then Krishna speaks the whole Bhagavad Gita. He gives information about the difference between the body and the soul. He gives information about buddhi yoga, how one connects to the Lord through one's spiritual intelligence. He gives information about karma yoga, about how everyone has to work in this world. Think about it. You can't stop working. I started getting the AARP magazine recently. You know what that is? That's the National Association of Retired Persons. I still feel like I'm a kid, 20 years old or something. But all of a sudden it started coming in the mail with my name on it. I realized, oh my God, I'm a senior citizen. And reading that magazine, it's very difficult for people. They plan their whole lives to try to get a little time off. Everyone. They work hard, go to school, try to make money, try to squirrel it away, find the best investment. Does it make 2% or 2.5%? Well, if 2.5%, I can retire in 17 years, and if it's 2%, it's going to take me till I'm, 24 years. And on all these arrangements, we try to get a little time off. Is there time off? Never. Krishna said, Nahi kashit shanamapi jatu tishchatya karma krit. Karyate hyavasha karma sarva prakriti jayargunai. No time off, ever. You don't get time off in the material world. It comes with your body. If you get a material body, you're destined to work. You have to work hard. That's just it. It's hard work to have a material body. But Krishna shows through karma yoga how you work, but it's not like regular work, because regular work makes you obligated more and more. You get more and more caught up when you work in material consciousness. And what is material consciousness? Material consciousness means whatever I get from my work, I get to keep. It's mine. Now that's what gets you in trouble. It's not yours. You don't get to keep it. Your body's not yours. The things you think are yours are not yours. And you're not even yours. You actually belong to Krishna. We're part and parcel of Krishna. So this whole idea, like, this is mine. Like, this is my house. It's not your house. Most people don't really own a house. Usually the bank owns it, first of all. And you'll find out really fast who owns it if you just don't pay for a couple months. They'll actually come and take it back. Really, they will. And even if you think you own it, and you've paid for it, it shows on paper that you've owned it, it can be taken away anyway. There's all kinds of things, especially in India. I know people that, in fact, devotees legitimately bought a piece of property in Govardhan, and then, 5-10 years later, I don't know how long it was, but someone came back and said, oh, you measured the property line incorrectly. Therefore, we own the property. Of course, they didn't get it, but you have to go to court for 5-10 years to try to prove that the property line was over here. This goes on all the time in Vrindavan. Anyone who's bought property in Vrindavan or lived in Vrindavan knows, and probably in many other places in the world, that these disputes go on all the time, and you have to give up the property. So this whole idea of working and keeping the fruit of your work, it's not accurate. It's not actually true. It's not ours to keep. So Krishna shows how you work, but you give the fruits of work back to Krishna, where they belong. And then you'll be detached from work. And then your work actually won't bind you to this material world. You work for Krishna. Don't work for yourself. And will you just die? Or will you not be maintained? No, you will be maintained. You'll be maintained whether you keep the fruits or you don't keep the fruits, still you'll be maintained. This whole universe is set up in a perfect way. Om Purnam Adak Purnam Idam. Purnat Purnam Udachate. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishite. Krishna is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. And because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. And within this complete universe, there is a complete arrangement for our maintenance. It's already there. You don't have to struggle so hard just to maintain. And therefore, the Ishapanishad says, we should understand, Isha Vashram Idang Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagat Yam Jagat Tena Tyak Tena Bhunjita Magridha Kasya Suddhanam. Everything animate or inanimate that's within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Kurvan eveha karmani jijivishek shatam samaha evam twai nanyatetos in karma lipite nare. If one goes on working in that way, he will not become bound to the laws of karma. And there's no alternative to this way for a human being. Asurya namate loka antena tamasavrita tamste pritya bigachchanti yekecha mahanojanaha. Those who don't follow this path, they get more and more entangled in the material world. So the Bhagavad Gita liberates us. Krishna gives the instruction how to work and be detached from the fruit of our work and not become more and more entangled to get free. Karma yoga. And then there's karma yoga action in Krishna consciousness. And then he explains the process of dhyana yoga, this how to fix the mind on Krishna, how to meditate on Krishna. And then in the seventh chapter, Krishna describes how one can see him everywhere within this world. Rasoham apsakonteya prabhasmi shashishuryo pranavak sarvavedeshu shabda ke purusham dishu. He says, I'm the taste in water. I'm the light of the sun and the moon. I'm the syllable om in the Vedic mantras. I'm the sound in ether, an ability in man. When you see some ability somewhere, you can see it's coming from Krishna. And onward he goes through the eighth chapter, talking about how devotees, although there are all kinds of ways that yogis and jnanis try to position themselves to leave the body at an opportune time, at a certain place, a certain way in order to become liberated, the devotees aren't so concerned with those things. Because simply by engaging in bhakti yoga, Krishna takes care of them. They don't have to worry about how they depart from this world, actually, just by the simple process of worshiping Krishna. And in the ninth chapter, he gives a very important instruction. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Mami vaishyasi yukvaivam atmana matparayana. Just fix your mind on me. And then he says, offer obeisances and worship me. Now, obeisances, you'll find in the, there's a book called Krishna Lila Stava. And it's by Rupa Goswami. And in the Krishna Lila Stava, Rupa Goswami gives a summary of the whole 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, all within a few hundred verses. And in the beginning of the Lila Stava, Krishna Lila Stava, he describes how one can serve God through offering obeisances. It's a very bona fide process. And there are different ways to offer obeisances. You can offer obeisances with your head and your elbows and your knees. That's 5 points. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then there are more points if you fall flat like a rod, then it's counted as there's more points that you're offering to Krishna, and so on. And these obeisances, actually, Krishna's recommending in the Bhagavad Gita. How easy is that? Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Offer me obeisances. That's devotional service. How hard is that to bow down? Well, for some people it's pretty hard. it's difficult if I don't think that that's a valuable thing. So Krishna's teaching in the Bhagavad Gita, if you bow down to me, if you put your head down on the ground like that, you'll feel satisfaction, actually. You'll perfect your life just through that thing. It's a very simple thing. Put your head down on the ground. And the Srimad Bhagavatam points out that if you're proud and you think that you're independent and you don't need to bow down before God, then your heavy turban with or your heavy crown that you're wearing on your head, if you're a king, that will pull your head down, especially at the time of death. Your head will hit the ground anyway. So Krishna is Mrityu Sarva Harashchaham. For those who don't want to bow down before God, I come as death. And then you can actually see, you can see me. I come in this form as death. Then Krishna goes on in the 10th chapter to describe his opulences. Of all the aquatics in the ocean, his representative is the
shark.
And of mountains, he is Mount Meru. Of immovable things, he is the
Himalayas.
Of letters, of compound words, he's the dual compound word. Of men, he is the monarch. Great warriors,
Arjuna.
So he gives all these opulences, and at the end of 10th chapter he says, but these are just, all these things I'm mentioning, they're just a spark of my opulence. All these emanations that we think are something special in the material world, they're actually coming from the breathing of Mahavishnu. Yasyaika nishvasita kalamata valambya jivanti loma vilaja jagananata Vishnur mahan sahiya yasya kala visheshu Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Brahma prays and he says, oh Govinda, actually everything in this whole material creation, all the universes are coming when Mahavishnu exhales. Is one exhalation. Everything comes into creation. All the Brahmas are manifest. They make all the material universes, create them. And after one exhalation, when he breathes back in, everything's wound up. Trillions and trillions of years in that one exhalation. So his breathing is creating all these things. While he's asleep on the causal ocean, he's in yoga nidra. Sleeping and breathing, creating universes. So Krishna is the source of that Mahavishnu, Brahma is saying. What is his opulence? In the 11th chapter, Krishna reveals the universal form to Arjuna. This chapter, when you read it, should make your hair stand on end. When you hear how Krishna is manifesting as this gigantic universal form, normally we don't even notice the universal form. Because we live in a city, there's so much light pollution, you go out, you don't see the sun and moon, you don't see the stars at night practically ever, or you don't notice them because we're in too much in a hurry. We don't even notice the sun rising. It's just in my eyes when I'm trying to get to work. But it's actually the biggest event of the day. The sun rises. What is the more important event than the sun rising? But nobody notices. Close the blinds, you know, I'm in a hurry. We don't notice. We're just going on, going on. But these things, they're all opulences of Krishna. Yat shakshade sasavita sakala grahanam. It's the eye of the Lord. The sun is appearing. So the universal form of the Lord, it's there all the time around us. But we're Krishna made a special appearance in the universal form and showed Arjuna. And if we read it, we can actually experience it. Then in the 12th chapter, devotional service, Krishna gives an explanation of how step by step we can come to the perfectional stage. And he tells of all the qualities of the pure devotees of the Lord. They're not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. And that they're a kind friend to all living entities. Kind friend to all living entities. 13th chapter, Krishna gives an explanation of his form as the super soul. How he's actually present everywhere in every atom at the same time. All-pervading consciousness, but he maintains his personality. Just as we're conscious of this one body, Krishna is conscious of all bodies. He knows what's going on simultaneously, everywhere at all time. His name is Yogeshwara. He's the supreme yogi. Some yogis can do a few little tricks, read your mind, but Krishna knows what everyone's thinking. And if I try to cheat Krishna, like I think, oh, well, you know, I'll do this, I'll make a show, but actually I'll hold back something. Krishna knows. Hiranyakashipu was the greatest cheater. He tried to cheat Vishnu by, you know, making all kinds of arrangements so that he wouldn't have to die. You know, not in the night, not in the day. Check. Not on the land, not on the sea. Check. Not in the house or not outside the house. Check. Not by any weapon. Okay, check. Not by any man, not by any demigod. Check. On and on. He went through the list. He had all his attorneys go through the whole thing. It was all ready to go. And Krishna knew how to bypass everything easily. And when he came as Nrisingadev, he killed Hiranyakashipu. And he found all the loopholes easily. So Krishna's a super soul. He knows what we're thinking. He knows our psychic movements. So we should surrender to Krishna. He knows already what we're doing, what we're thinking. And in the 14th chapter, very important, Krishna says, this knowledge is more important than anything I've told you so far. It's about the three modes of material nature and how they're acting upon us in this world. And if we see that, then we'll be indemnified from their effect if we have that knowledge. Otherwise, we walk right into it every time. Like there's the mode of goodness. That's the mode of existence. Because we do exist, right? Sattva. We exist. But in sattva, you can actually see that you exist. But in passion, in rajas, that's the mode of activity. And why is there activity? Because I want to become something. But in sattva, I already am something. Why do I have to become something? In rajas, I have to become something. What do you want to become? Well, when I grow up, I want to become. When I, you know, get my next job, I want to become. I want to become. That's rajas makes us always moving. And that's what rules the whole material world, is rajas. Everyone's moving, moving, moving. The whole material world is called jagat. You know, jagat means jagachati, means going on, going on, going on. It's always going on, always moving. Then the mode of ignorance means everything stops. Inertia, intoxication. You think about it, but you can't lift a hand. I know people in the mode of ignorance that have been telling me the same thing for the last 25 years, that I wish I could do this, something, but I just can't. You should do it. I was like, why don't you do it? Oh, I don't know. Still thinking about it. And if you're in the mode of goodness and you encounter the mode of ignorance, you'll be affected by it. But if you're in the mode of ignorance and you encounter the mode of ignorance, it won't have any effect on you. Just like when you mix alkaline and alkaline, there's no reaction. And if you mix acid and acid, there's no reaction. But if you mix alkaline and acid, there's a big reaction. Just like if you take Mentos and you put them in a can of Pepsi and you slam it on the ground, it'll shoot to the moon because there's an acid and alkaline. And there's a big reaction. So if we cultivate the mode of goodness, then we'll be aware of these other modes, which Krishna says, the mode of passion, it binds you to the material world. It appears to be happiness in the beginning, but it becomes misery at the end. Now, how do you like that? How do you like this arrangement, that you come here and live in this house for 2 days, and we'll give you everything you want, but in the end, we're going to beat you with shoes until you can't move? Would you take that? Well, see, you have to have the knowledge to know that that's what I'm getting when I engage in the mode of passion. It looks really good. Yeah, I'll take it. And then at the end, you get beat with shoes till you can't move. That's not a good arrangement. So, therefore, you have to have knowledge to enter into the mode of goodness. Why? Because it looks like it's a bad deal in the beginning. But in the end, it's favorable. In the beginning, Krishna says, it's like poison. But at the end, it's like nectar. Mode of passion, it's like nectar in the beginning and poison at the end. And what about the mode of ignorance? Poison in the beginning, poison in the end. But you can't stop taking it. That's how powerful the modes are. Even though it's oppressing you, even though you know you're drinking poison, you still can't stop doing it. Because the mode of passion, it's a guna, it's a rope. It's tied you down to that position. So Krishna is giving that knowledge for our benefit in the 14th chapter. How to see the modes. How he tells every detail of our of how they react within our activities in our life, in our speech, in our thought, in our determination. Where else do you find that information anywhere in the world? At Oracle? At Microsoft? All they give is a machine. It's a machine. And there, if you go on the machine, it's a very advanced machine. Nothing close to what the brain can do. But the machine, you go on it, and what's on there? It's a bunch of junk. Really, you go on the internet, and basically there's so much stuff being propagated now, most of it in the mode of ignorance. Most of the money that comes through the internet is coming through pornography. And there's all kinds of other stuff that is just nonsense that's coming through. So you can look everywhere. You're not going to find this kind of information except for coming from the Bhagavad Gita. Very practical knowledge that you can apply immediately. It's not just theoretical. And it's not something that's hard to understand. You can see it for yourself. Krishna says in the 9th chapter, Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram idamutamam pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukam kartamami. He sums up this knowledge that he's giving in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, it's the king of education. You know, any education that you're trying to get anywhere, he said, this is the king of knowledge, what you're going to get from this. Rajaguhyam. And it's the most secret of all secrets. But it's open to everybody. That's the funny thing. It's available. But it remains secret because everyone's so bewildered by the mode of passion. They can't take time to look at it. Like, okay, I don't have time right now. Later. Prahlad Maharaj says, later never comes. When you're a little child, you know, goo-goo gaga, and you don't have time because you're helpless. And then you want to play with toys, and then boys want to play with girls want to play with boys, and then you get household life where you have to work hard just to make the overhead. It costs you $15,000 a month just to pay for your health insurance. Honest. And for all your other stuff. And how are you going to have time then? And then later when you get old, you got to try to just hold your bones together so you can get around. And you never have time, Prahlad Mar says. You know, so it's Rajaguhyam. It remains secret. People can't take to it. Pavitram, but it's the most purifying thing to hear Bhagavad Gita, to read Bhagavad Gita. Idamuttamam, the supreme purifying force, is Bhagavad Gita, because it's coming from the breathing of Krishna. And then Pratyaksha, it's directly experienced. It's not theoretical. You get to experience it for yourself the way a person who's hungry and eats a meal gets to experience that he or she is becoming full, becoming nourished, and getting life back just from that wonderful meal. Same thing with Bhagavad Gita. Susukam kartamavyam, and it makes you happy too. Bhagavad Gita will make you happy. Because when we present Bhagavad Gita, when we go out into public, and people don't know what it is, and we present it, some devotees say, it's the art of inner happiness. Art of inner happiness. And that's what Krishna shows us, actually how to experience real happiness. Because the other happiness that the material nature is offering is a trick. You don't really get the happiness. It just looks like you're going to get it. But Prahlad Maharaj calls it Shruti Sukham. It's happiness you hear about, but you never actually get it. It sounds like it should be there, but it doesn't actually ever come. Then we have the 15th chapter, which we talked about, the tree of the material world. 16th chapter is the divine and demoniac natures. That there are two different kinds of natures that people have in this world. And we should cultivate the divine qualities. 17th chapter, again, gives a detailed account of the modes of material nature, and 18 is the conclusion of the whole Bhagavad Gita, summarized. Everything summarized right in the 18th chapter, with Krishna finally saying, Sarva dharmam parityaja, mam ekam sharanam raja, aham tvam sarva papi bhyo moksha ishami masujaha. Just surrender unto me, and I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Do not worry. Do not hesitate. Do not fear. Do not worry. Do not hesitate. Ma shuchaha. You read through the whole Bhagavad Gita, and if we understand actually the precarious nature of the material nature and what a situation we're in, that we can die at any moment and we don't know where we're going, then we'll cling to the Bhagavad Gita. And we'll cling to these words, ma shuchaha, in the Krishna book, there's a description of a person who was in a very precarious situation, and it's described by the Srimad Bhagavatam that he was, the expression on his face was like someone who is about to die, who is looking at a picture of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this Bhagavad Gita is actually the words of Krishna, and they are ever fresh in this world. In every culture, in every language, people who read Bhagavad Gita can understand the essential science that is necessary to attain perfection in human life. Therefore, we say that the most important charity work to be done in the world today is to distribute this knowledge. Because if you open a hospital, for instance, you can spend millions of dollars to open a hospital, and it will not end birth, death, old age, and disease. People will still get sick. There is no a hospital or no doctor that can actually cure your disease ultimately. As Prahlad Maharaj says, Balasya neha sharanam pitaro nishinga, nartasya chaganam udanmati majitonu. He says that if you take your sick child to the doctor and you say, can you guarantee that you'll cure him? What will he say? What will he say? Huh? He said, I'll try. I'll try my best. What else can he say? He can't say he can guarantee. He can't even guarantee that, you know, he won't make you worse. And in fact, Prahlad Maharaj says that too. Most medicine that you take in the material world makes you worse. Like the alternative oftentimes is worse. You take it and then you end up in a worse off condition. Oops, sorry, hit the nerve there. You know, when I broke my arm one time and then they told me, you know, well, we can put the bone back together and screw it together and all that, but, you know, you might lose the feeling in your hand if we do that. So I'm like, I don't think I'll have it. I'll just live with it. You know, you can't guarantee anything in the material world, Prahlad Maharaj said. He gives the example, can you save a drowning man if you go out there in a boat? Well, maybe, you can try. The Titanic is a great example. They had a huge boat. They put all their resources and best engineers into it, and the boat sank on the maiden voyage. And no one expected it. And most of the people drowned because they didn't even have enough lifeboats for everybody. So this is a difficult situation we're in the material world, that we're at the mercy of material nature. We can't be protected by our family even. We can't be protected by our money, our strength, our kids. Nobody can protect us. Only Krishna can protect us. Therefore, Krishna says, surrender to me. Masuja, don't make any other business in this world that is unnecessary. Don't make any more entanglement for yourself. Do what your duty is, what nature you have, what you're born into, what you have to perform, what duty, but you don't have to increase it more and more and more and become more entangled. Krishna says, surrender to me. If you're working, then use that work to spread Krishna consciousness. Or if you can't do that, then just be charitable and give it away somehow. Do some kind of charity work. If you can follow the process of bhakti yoga in a regulated way by bowing down before Krishna, by offering Krishna something, and by helping to spread the message of Bhagavad Gita, which Krishna incidentally says at the end of Bhagavad Gita, that for the person who's engaged in spreading this knowledge, that person is the most dear to me of any other person. So if you can do that, then very quickly you get the results of following the Bhagavad Gita, and you'll feel the happiness that's inherent in every soul, but we've only forgotten it because we've become covered by Maya, and we think that we're this body, but we're not. Hare Krishna. Now, how many of the kids are here that are learning Bhagavad Gita? I thought some more were coming. Okay. Well, we're going to chant the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita all the way through tonight to invoke special blessings. And Pooja has been studying Bhagavad Gita let's get her an asana. You want to sit up here, Pooja? Get her a seat somewhere. Is this one vacant? Is anybody sitting here? Here. And one of the microphones we have here. And so everyone can turn to the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And that's on page number 395. And so what we'll do is we'll chant all the Sanskrit all the way through. And then we'll see what happens after that. But look at that. You're getting hit by Arjuna's arrows here. Wow, these are beautiful. Is everybody on the page? Anybody lost? Yes, Prabhuji. Can we spare more Bhagavad Gita? We sure can. Bhagavad Gita, that's our business here. We're in the Bhagavad Gita business here at ISV. Everyone, please move up 7.5 inches. 7.5 inches straight ahead, please. And then, would you distribute the rest of those Bhagavad Gitas? Okay, here we go. We better keep moving. Is everybody okay? Does that mean yes? Is anybody not okay? If you're okay, raise your hand. If you're not okay, raise your hand. Okay, Jagat Jivan's not okay. So maybe this will make you better, this chanter. He's a little of both. Okay. Who's a little bit of both? Okay and not okay. Okay. Okay, so Pooja is going to lead us in the chanting of the Sanskrit through the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll go from the beginning all the way to the end. And now we're leading up to Gita Jayanti Day. Now Gita Jayanti Day is a very special day because it's the appearance day of Bhagavad Gita. It's the actual day that Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. As far as we're concerned, that's every day because every day we read Bhagavad Gita. And every time you open the Bhagavad Gita, you're directly hearing Krishna. It's not different from being on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Absolutely the same. 100%, because Krishna is absolute. But there is a way that we remember every year how Krishna came and spoke the Bhagavad Gita. And this Gita Jayanti Day is coming up on the 19th of this month. All this week, starting from right now when we chant this shlokas that Pooja is going to lead us in, from now all the way through the end of the year, we're pulling out all the stops and we're going to be distributing thousands of Bhagavad Gitas all over the Bay Area. I just read on a website today, one devotee named Pandu Das, who was talking about how he had become very interested in yoga, and he was going to live in the forest, and he was going to live there and meditate. And he made a stop off in town before he went there, and he stopped in a used bookstore, and he found the Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he began reading it, and he said it so radically and profoundly changed his life that he entirely changed his course of action. This was about 7 years ago. And then he became engaged in bhakti yoga and is following. Now, tens of thousands of people all over the world, including people in China, in Russia, in New Zealand, all over America, Africa, of course, India now, Krishna consciousness, the international site of Krishna consciousness, there's a huge groundswell. It's growing like anything all over India because this is the land of Krishna. But internationally, just from reading Bhagavad Gita as it is, in many different translations, people are hearing it, they're taking to Krishna consciousness. Whether they're joining the society or whether they're practicing in their own home, these things, they're not so important as long as one can take this up. But tens and thousands of people are taking this up from reading Bhagavad Gita as it is. So our mission here in the Bay Area over the next couple of weeks up to the end of the year is to distribute as many Bhagavad Gitas as possible. We've ordered from the publishing company, this is our fulfillment director, Rakshit Jariwala Prabhu, and he's just ordered thousands of Bhagavad Gitas. You'll see in this hardback form and also in the paperback form. We're getting 2,500 copies of the paperback and more thousands of these hardback books. And our intention is to distribute them all throughout the Bay Area. Some devotees have been calling around to stores and businesses, asking them how many cases they would like, and they're ordering over the phone so that they will take cases and distribute to their customers, their employees. Other people are calling in from many different parts of our society here. Even people who aren't here tonight are calling in, ordering cases of Bhagavad Gita. Over the last couple of weeks, people have taken home cases of Bhagavad Gita. And so this is our, and the devotees here who are part of Team ISV, the Sankirtan team that goes out into the city here, there are many different members, almost 100 members of that team, who work together to go out. They organize, they make these charts. It takes weeks of organization to put these things together. They make lunches. They organize the ordering of the books. They find all the spots where we have permission to go out and distribute these books. And then they actually go out and they meet people for the first time and give them Bhagavad Gita. So we have almost 100 members doing that. And over the last couple of weeks, they've been going out regularly. Just yesterday, some devotees went out. Last weekend, everyone was out. And next weekend, which is Saturday, the 15th, this is called World Enlightenment Day. It's a tradition here at International Society for Krishna Consciousness that everyone who wants an opportunity to go out to give Bhagavad Gita to others will have an opportunity on that day. We'll make sure of it, that you have a place to go. And we have, as I say, these thousands of books. So there's different ways that you can participate, and Rakshit Prabhu will be telling about that soon after we chant the Bhagavad Gita. But we encourage everybody. I'm asking everyone to please, this is the time of year when people are open to hearing about philosophy. Christmas time is a time of hope, when people are hoping to have some spiritual experience. But mostly, especially here in America, it's been turned into more of a commercial experience where you try to buy certain types of things. And the closer it gets to Christmas and then right after Christmas, it's a very frustrating experience because everything, all the happiness you thought would be there sort of ends up as a frustration through unfulfilled desires. But now, this time of year, people are very open to hearing about spiritual knowledge. So we intend to distribute at least, we had an initial goal of 4,000 books. But since it's been going so well and so many people are coming forward, we're moving that upwards. And we're aiming to do all of the books that we've just ordered, which will put us closer up towards 8,000, maybe 10,000 books. So we ask everyone to do a little bit. Everyone do a little bit. Do the most you can. Do the best you can to help this effort. Because our philosophy here is a lot of people doing a little bit. And if you have any inkling or sentiment towards the Bhagavad Gita, then follow Krishna's instruction to give it to the world, to expand it, especially around this time for Gita Jayanti Day.